If we had them, the Akashans would never wait for a catastrophe on Earth to seize them. They would attack without losing time, and their problem of overpopulation would be solved in one fell swoop. The sun was already quite low as in the southern hemisphere of the Earth on a May day at 17 o'clock. It was growing colder. Akok broke the silence and said, "Let's go now, before we take the fifth meal, we can have another drink." We went to one of the restaurants of the 20 kilometers long hotel. Before we got our stuff out of the cabin and sat down at a table in a bar, I asked, "Will we be spending the night here?" "No, after the meal we fly back to Tarnuk." I thought, if only I had omitted that stupid question. I also thought of the hours that lay here before me. If something stupid escaped me again, I could spend the rest of my life here. So I decided to sound out Akok, seeing if there was a way to shorten my stay here a bit. "What time will we start tomorrow?" "When it gets dark." That's how it was decided. Would the son of the sun agree if you told him I would rather start earlier? "Maybe it's possible," he said with a sigh. "Could you still talk to him today?" "Yes, I can convey your request to him if you want." "Yes, I would like it. You may even be pleased with my idea that you may be a little tired of my company, or maybe at him afraid of repeating my stupid ideas again. You would have to report that to him out of a sense of responsibility." 21. Another case law. We had already had our drink and looked around the restaurant. Suddenly, I noticed a man near the door. Never had I seen such a badly dressed person on Akkad. Not only was this man dressed poorly, but his expression also showed that he was suffering. He wore faded, dirty rags, old shoes and no hat. When he noticed that I was looking at him, he addressed me. Of course, I could not understand him, but I could tell from his gestures that he was asking for food. I turned to Akok, "You said on Akkad there are neither poor nor rich, here all are the same." "Yes, that's right. So what about him, there at the door? See what he's wearing around his neck. That's a kind of medal. What does it mean? Is he perhaps a mendicant?" "No, on the contrary, it marks him as a criminal." "What did he do?" "I do not know. I do not know him." "How do you know then that he is a criminal?" "I want to explain that to you. Here on Akkad there are no prisons." I got more and more confused. A man who has committed a crime, depending on the severity, can be chastised, forced to do light or heavy labor, or even put to death if so sentenced. The man you see here has committed a middle severity crime, so he has not been given the hardest punishment. He was punished for a time with exclusion from society. How is this punishment expressed? He has to work without the rights of a citizen of Akkad. He also cannot turn to a public authority and make a request there. Do all people know that he committed a crime? It's quite simple. His conviction is revealed on the necklace with the medal he must hang around his neck. He can only lose that if he serves his sentence. He always has the same dress and symbol around his neck, which identifies him wherever he goes. But if he goes to another city, he cannot do that. He may not use any vehicle. Even if he went there on foot, it would not help him, because the laws are the same everywhere. Then how can he even survive? If he is married, his wife or children, his parents or other relatives will provide for him. Look at him now. I looked back at him. One of the waiters handed him a bowl. He sat down on the stairs and began to eat greedily. He can only eat outside a restaurant. You do not give him anything inside? That's the way it is. Yatim, I'm sure you can imagine that it's humiliating for him to eat outside. Would not it be better to put him in a jail and let him work there? If he lurking around here, then others must provide for him. That's true. I believe that such a law does not exist on Earth, because there are many uninhabited areas on Earth. A convict could retreat there, and once there, he would not have to suffer a tenth of the humiliation this man suffers wherever he goes. Yes, that is true. There is no such law with us. But if the Earth were populated as densely as Akkad, then you could consider something like that. We talked about this topic for some time, But since I do not want to go into more detail on laws and case law, I write nothing more about it. The meal was served, a corky gilly at most dishes, but I confine myself to the things I already knew. I could not eat anything, my stomach would have gone on strike, so I say not possible because there were different foods I would never have dared to eat because I was convinced that I would not be able to digest them. After the meal we picked up our things. A cork took a coat out of his suitcase and gave it to me. Despite the thick Akashian clothes, I was now considerably cold. I was already preparing for a long march to our ship, unless A cork had someone close by. I wanted to go to the elevator, but A cork directed me to a staircase. 22. A train on wheels. As far as I could see, this staircase led to a tunnel, because we were already on the ground floor. I asked, where are we going? To where the ship is. But is not it on the roof? And we go down instead of up? He laughed, patted me on the back and replied, do not get upset, I know the way. I did not know what to say and went with him. We went down 10 steps, then the staircase made a left turn, went down another 5 or 6 steps. We could hear the voices of many people. When we arrived downstairs, he looked at me and smiled meaningfully. I, too, laughed and said, now I understand why it is so much easier and faster to get to the parking lot. What I saw before me was something that an intelligent people had invented to save space. It would never have occurred to me that there were many small trains running underneath this building, which were full of passengers. By the way, these were the first wheeled vehicles for passengers I had seen on Akkad. We were standing on a platform. A cork pushing one of the levers that was everywhere here, a train stopped and a door opened at the same time, and he bid me enter. The door closed and the train began to move off with a speed AA of about 30 kilometers, h. I would say that it was a train, although in some ways it was different from the trains on Earth. He also drove on tracks. I could not see the size of the wheels. There were no single cars, but compartments for two people, like small carts strung together. As it was a subway, the train naturally had roof. The engine had to be somewhere in the middle of the train, you did not hear any noise. As the train began to move, I looked around but saw no driver. I asked A cork afterwards, and he answered, we ourselves are the controllers, anyone who gets in can guide it. But how? Everything is automatic. As you can see, all of these stops. There was a bar of about 20 meters length and 4 to 5 meters width about every 100 meters, have levers such as this one here. He pointed to one attached to a pillar on the platform where we had stopped. The passenger climbs onto this platform when he sees a train he wants to use, presses a button on the pillar. At the touch of a button, a lever that touches the train lowers and stops. The door opens. The door closes again as soon as the train starts to move. You yourself did not press a button, but pressed down the lever. That's right. We men can trigger the lever directly by hand, but women and children do it with the touch of a button. If you cannot exert a strong arm pressure, the button press is sufficient to disconnect the motor of the train, bringing it to a standstill. Aha! Where do these trains go? Only from one end of the building to the other. We talked more about it, because there were 4 parallel tracks, 2 on each side. In the middle lay these platforms, which were intended for 2 lines. The other 2 platforms lay on each side of the building and served for the other 2 lines. He had told me earlier that there are subways in the cities for distances of up to 500 kilometers that travel at great speed. I asked him, are all the subways on Akkad like these? Yes. Almost everyone. Why are not these trains faster here? Here is a resort, so there is no reason to be in a hurry. Yes, of course. I would still like to know how the trains turn at the end point. There's a train on every track. When he reaches the end point, he touches a certain contact there, which causes him to run in the other direction. So the motor works in both directions? Yes, it has a gearbox. Are these motors powered by solar energy? Of course. What happens if nobody wants to go the other way at the end point? That does not matter. If the contact is touched, the train automatically drives in the other direction. That's wonderful, it needs neither fuel nor staff. I was so carried away by the report that I would have liked to drive to the end point. Apart from the fact that I had this wish, it also reminded me that I did not know where to go to get to our ship. Acock did not seem to have that wish. On one of the next platforms, he pulled the lever, the train stopped, and we got out. We went to a staircase and went upstairs. Acock knew where we were going. We climbed and were on the roof of the building in a short time. A sharp wind blew in my face and eyes. I noticed hundreds of ships up there. I thought, can he find the ship right now? It was based on legible letters or numbers on the floor, which of course were incomprehensible to me. After 10 to 15 meters we found the ship and got in. 23. My return journey will be brought forward. Acock maneuvered the ship as usual. In a few minutes we had left the 20 kilometers long building behind us. I asked, where are we going now? To Tarnuk. Yes, I know that, but I mean, are we flying directly to your apartment? No, we fly to the Son of the Sun, because you want to bring forward your return flight. We'll see what he says. Do you think he'll TMLL give his approval? If you ask him, he'll agree. He had lowered the ship's two canopies, and we stopped talking about the subject so I could look out and see the cities we flew over. I cannot describe exactly how Akkad and its cities, viewed from an altitude of 2,000 to 4,000 meters, looks like. I can only say that this prospect reminded me of my childhood when my parents were still living in the interior of Brazil. There were endless wooded plains back then. In order to build settlements there, these forests were cleared. On sunny August and September days, these cleared trees were burned with the stumps and any branches. The fires shone day for days around the area. Because we lived in a higher location, on dark nights I often spent many hours watching this great spectacle. Although I was sorry that all these trees had to be burned, because I had been a great friend of nature as a child, and yet it was fascinating to see this sea of AA flames at night. The sight of the cities on Akkad was even more fascinating, for their sparkling brightness shone in a thousand colors. There were no lights shining down there, there were the walls of the houses, shining in a thousand shades of color. In my whole life, I have never seen such a magnificent thing. Quite lost in that sight, I had not noticed that we were already flying over Tarnuk. In this area of Akkad, one city seemed to merge into another. We flew directly to the government building. When we reached his roof, the time was like it was about 7:30 in the evening on Earth. We went to the Sun's apartment on the same way as the first time. On the first visit, I noticed several details that I now recognized. Acock rang the doorbell and we were greeted by the same young man at the door. Acock spoke briefly with him. The young man bowed respectfully, went into the apartment and came back after a few minutes to ask us in. Since we were allowed to enter, I assumed that the Son of the Sun was at home, but to make sure, I asked Acock, is the Son of the Sun at home, will he receive us? Yes, of course. Acock glanced at me with these words, which made me realize that he would have liked to say, why would he not see us? Cannot you wait? At that moment the Son of the Sun entered and apologized for the little delay. He greeted Acock by placing his hand on his shoulder. He greeted me with a nod that I respectfully returned. We all sat down. He talked to Acock a few minutes excitedly. Often both looked at me and finally Acock translated his question. So you would like us to fly earlier than agreed to the Earth? Yes, EATML like that, if it were possible. Maybe Wurtmv had enough of us and our customs and manners? EATMD like to stay here for the rest of my life because I admire so much on Akkad. But I have a family and I'm homesick for her. When I think of my relatives, it takes away a lot of my pleasure in seeing so much that is beautiful and good here. But I would like to tell you that on Earth I have never been treated as well as here, for I belong to the Great Legion of the Eternally Forgotten. What do you mean by that? I am a poor earthly citizen, and on Earth, only the rich are remembered. When Acock translated my answer, he smiled contentedly, interlaced his fingers, flicked his palms open and closed a few times, and said, "It's up to you. You can leave Danube tomorrow morning before dawn. It is also better for us to leave a little earlier, for every moment that delays the journey extends it." "Yes, sir," I replied, but thought, "How is the journey to be prolonged?" As I only traveled by bus or on foot, I did not think for a moment that the planets were moving at different speeds through space. I wanted to ask Acorn about it at the right time. While I was thinking about my simple problems, Acorn and the Son of the Sun were talking. The latter took a piece of paper, wrote a few words on it, and gave it to the young man, who hurried away. The Son of the Sun turned to me, "Everything is now arranged. I have just sent a message to Acorn to prepare for your departure before dawn. You will return in the same ship that brought you here." After Acorn translated that, the Son of the Sun spoke again, "Our time is coming to an end, and if you had stayed a little longer, you would have done much more. However, I hope that you accept this invitation, although you must be very tired after such a long day with us. The days are much longer than yours in return, there is a long night to rest." When Acorn translated this, I smiled. I did not really know if I should laugh or cry. I thought, whatever this invitation will be, I must accept it. This cannot mean anything bad. The Akashans certainly have no evil. So I answered, "I gladly accept your invitation, even without you telling me what it is." He smiled contentedly and replied, "Well, I will make my preparations. Mr. Acorn will tell you what it is about." Immediately he went out. 24. A sports field. I immediately asked Acorn, "What are we invited for?" Acorn was amused by my curiosity and replied, "Do not get upset, the Sun's Son did not invite you to ruin you. What is it?" In the nights before a big trip, the students of our universities compete in various disciplines in the presence of the Son of the Sun and many other spectators. Competitions with weapons? No, athletic struggles. I think you have not seen anything like that since you were here. There are many kinds of sports here. No, I did not TMT know that, but I would be very interested. What is there to see? You will soon see for yourself. At that moment the Son of the Sun came in again. He wore warm clothes and started talking to Acorn. Shortly afterwards, the young man came in through the front door and handed the Son of the Sun a white envelope. He pulled out a document. I could not find anything written on it, but it still had to contain a message, for he read it in a low voice. He paused, looked at Acorn, and said, "It's all right, you can start at the appointed hour." When Acorn translated it to me, I wanted to ask a question, but my voice failed me, and when I could speak again, the Sun's Son had left. Acorn and I went to the elevator, and on the way I asked, "Where are we going now?" "To the sports field." "Does the Son of the Sun not go with us?" "No, he flies though with his family in his ship." Soon we were above the city. I actually had a lot of questions to ask, but decided to be quiet. Only the content of the message interested me burning. When I was about to ask, Acorn said, "We have arrived." "That building there?" I pointed to a square, about 10-story building. "Yes, that's it." As we got closer, I thought we were heading for the roof. Acorn maneuvered a bit and we landed on a terrace on one side of the building. As I got out, I asked, "Will the Son of the Sun land here too?" There was room for 2 to 3 ships on this deck. Naturally, from here you get to the boxes, which are reserved for him and his guests. Worried, I thought of the other guests, and about the little monster, as his daughter was in memory. So I asked Acorn, "Can we not sit down anywhere else than here?" "Why? Surely only high-ranking personalities are sitting here. I probably will not feel very comfortable though." "It is unthinkable. That would be a great insult to the Son of the Sun. You know that there are no higher and lesser personalities with us. I can add that every Akashan is proud to be near you, just like the Son of the Sun too. You are the first human being to come to our planet, under circumstances that have allowed him to see and experience so much. I understand that my absence would offend the Son of the Sun, But you must also understand that a person like me has an inferiority complex. I cannot get rid of it that fast. It takes some time to adapt. Do not think about it anymore. Just think you're home. Smiling, he put his arm around my shoulder and led me through a door to a short corridor. We arrived in a hall. I was wondering, like most of the time since I was on Eckhart, that the sports field was inside a building. The room was much bigger than a basketball court. There was also another huge room, only a part of which was reserved for the sport. On this part, incredible as it may seem, there was a grass field of about 80 by 100 meters, surrounded by grandstands that gradually turned into galleries at the top. We entered here now. I cannot say how many people were in this room, but I had never met so many people on a sports ground on Earth. I was so busy with the view that it took me some time to realize that I was sitting next to a cork in a chair and in a place that a king might envy. I saw that all the people in the galleries were equally comfortable. A cork broke the silence and asked me, "How do you like it?" "It's wonderful." I saw people pouring in from all sides and noticed that there were 8 places left next to us, which were probably reserved for the Son of the Sun. I asked, "Will he be here soon?" "Yes, he will be here any moment." I looked closer at the lawn. 2 things excited my curiosity. First, the lawn itself, and second, the sport that was to be demonstrated here. Our football could not be it, because I saw neither goals nor lines of the field. "How did such a lawn get into a building?" I asked Acock. "What kind of sport will we see here?" "You'll find out soon." Since he gave me no answer to this question, I asked, "What kind of grass is this that can grow inside a building?" "There is no sun coming in here. Anything that grows needs sunshine. Of course the sun is essential for any growth, but what you see here is neither grass nor lawn, it's artificial grass." "Artificial? Think of it as a kind of carpet that can be moved or replaced at any time. That seems impossible to me. Where can the sunbeams penetrate here?" "Look up the roof up here, it is articulated and only closes when it rains." But this astonished me very much, for I did not see any pillars supporting it in the middle. I probably saw columns on the side, but in the middle there was a free space of about 120 by 130 meters. I was thinking about how such an enormous roof could be moved. It would have to be enough over the whole stadium. I wanted to know exactly and asked, "How is it moved?" "It must have a tremendous weight." He laughed and replied, "This seems difficult to you, and yet it is quite simple. First, the weight of the roof is very light, and secondly, the movement is as follows. You see, it is higher in the middle than at the sides, where it is supported by arches going from side to side in both directions." "Okay, I had not noticed that before." "It's drawn from 4 sides. Through this arch lead cables that you cannot see from here. They are connected to 4 solar motors, 1 on each side. Or it can be manually operated with a handle if necessary." "Does it take a long time?" "No, it can be opened and closed in no time, like a sheet of paper you open and close." "Now I understand it." The stadium was now completely filled. There was a gong that you heard everywhere. Everyone rose from their place, including Acock and me. The Son of the Sun had come in, accompanied by his family, his 2 employees, and 2 other gentlemen. One of the latter I realized, it was Tuek, whom I had met in Con. Everyone clapped their hands, one heard loud cheers. Then it became very quiet, until the newcomers had sat down. All the other people also took their seats again. Acock greeted the new arrivals and talked animatedly with them. Tuek greeted me and asked Acock how I felt. I answered him, "I am fine." On the 10th level, where we sat, there were only 10 chairs, on which the Son of the Sun with his family, his employees and attendants, as well as Acock and I sat. The children and one of the young staff sat in the 2nd row behind us. I was glad that the little monster sat behind me, at least I did not have to always meet those curious eyes. Acock translated a question from the Sun. "Son, you enjoy sports? I've heard that there are many sports on Earth." "Yes, I'm a great sports fan and have watched many sports competitions on Earth. I hope you like our competitions too. Several of them will be very similar to those on Earth. Yes, sir, I'm sure I'll enjoy it. Now two figures appeared on the lawn, if I may call it that. Each had a bucket-like vessel in his hand. All people looked at the two of them excitedly. What would they do? You could see that they drew a line of about 25 meters length across the middle of the lawn, then a second parallel to it at a distance of about 10 meters, then they made another 20 strokes in the opposite direction, connecting the first two. They left the square, which looked like a zebra. In came now 20 young men. They made an Olympic turn and faced two parties in the middle of the square. One party wore white boots to the knee, the other black. They were tied up similarly to football boots. They wore colorless shirts held by straps over the shoulder and were connected by a cross strap on the back. I laughed inwardly as I thought of the spectacle that the 20 young people were to perform. It could not be football like ours or something similar, because the lines on the grass had moved quite differently. I was beginning to be embarrassed to always have to ask a cook, so I decided to wait and see what would happen. For the time being, however, nothing happened, and Acock told me unasked that it was a kind of pushing contest. I use this term because I cannot think of a better one. 10 youths were now facing each other. Two older men had come onto the field, giving them signs, or rather instructions. Two each approached each other across the middle of the two inner lines. The two major lines seemed to be the boundary for the two groups. They braced themselves and tried to cross the enemy line. If one of them managed to push his opponent across the line, the bout seemed to have come to an end for him, because he was not allowed to come to the aid of a beleaguered comrade, the group that pushed most opponents over the line at the end, won. There was probably a whole set of rules for the game, but as Acock had not explained it to me, I did not know much about it. But I could see that the white group had won because they had 6A surviving ATM opponents. The battle was over, the victorious party stood in a semicircle in the middle of the sports field, while the defeated ones lagged behind, and the audience cheered the victors, who laughed. The defeated team seemed like a football team that just lost the World Cup. I thought about the great applause and also about the significance they attributed to such a contest, judged by the ovations when the Son of the Sun got up and all fell silent. Using an escalator near me that had escaped my notice, he went down to the lawn. When he was down, a raging cheer erupted, and I, too, applauded without really intending to. He thanked everyone with elegant movements. Now it was quiet again. He approached the victorious party, a seconded gentleman, coming from the opposite direction, joined them. He had a box in his hand, which he opened in front of the Son of the Sunday. He pulled out a medal. One of the winning group stepped forth and got the medal under the frenetic applause of the crowd. After that, the other winners all received a slightly smaller medal. He then led the way out, followed by the winning and losing party. The Son's Son came back up the escalator and talked to a cook. Of course, I did not understand anything and thought to myself, they are doing all sorts of ceremonies for such a competition. Don't you TMT, they have better sports than this? A bullfight on Earth could possibly be compared with it. Something still surprised me. One of the competitors had received a big medal and also one of the smaller ones. Why had he been given two? Maybe he was the captain of the victors? I asked Acock, but he answered, no, he was not. He got the big medal for an individual win, the second for the team win. What is meant by an individual winner TM? An individual winner is the one who brings his opponent first over the line. How would it have been if one of the losing party won the singles match? There are black medals for the individual and white for the group fight. And if this had been equal, 50-50, then the group would have won, to which the individual winner belonged. But if, for example, a giant guy encounters a very small one, then 99% of the time the big guy would win. That does not happen. There are different sizes in each party, but those who fight with each other are pretty much the same size and weight. As I did not TMT see anyone beginning to leave, are there any other competitions? Yes, but completely different from what you just saw, the next is similar to the football game on Earth. Are you saying that you know and practice football here like we do on Earth? No, we're playing differently, but many of us have already watched football matches on Earth. Akashans have been at football matches on Earth?